This podcast is intended for investment professionals only.
Hello, and welcome to LGIM Talks. My name's Anthony Penson, and I'm a content manager here at LGIM. Our first CIO call of the year was recorded via a live webinar. In the webinar, our CIO, Sonia Loud, discusses the outlook for both the global and the UK economies, paying particular attention to the path for UK growth, rates, and inflation. Next, Guy Whitby-Smith, our Head of Solutions Portfolio Management, presents on the implications for UK schemes, before handing over to John Rowe, our Head of Multi-Asset Funds, who discusses asset allocation considerations, given the continued need for all pension schemes to pay pensions as they progress along the journey towards endgame. We're now sharing an edited version of the audio with you, our podcast listeners. We hope you enjoy what was a fascinating discussion of markets, rates, endgame planning, and asset allocation.
Very warm welcome. It clearly will be another very, very interesting year. And as you can see here from the title, it will be a lot about politics. I'm sure we will talk a little bit about pivots as well. And most importantly, what the market narrative will bring, because it is very clear that the data points, and in particular, the all markets rally at the end of the year, will not leave a lot of room for error to get this wrong. But as you know, our mantra, it is prepare, don't predict. The one thing that is certain this year is uncertainty, because we will have a lot of influencing factor that will drive the market narrative. And the starting point, if we just looked at the US for a minute, of what the market is expecting for this year is, one, for inflation to fall further towards target, two, GDP growth to slow, but clearly to remain positive, and there's more near-term chatter and indication that this might even be more positive than originally expected. And let's not forget, politics always play a role in an election year and how this might shape out. We will have we have expectations of EPS growth to accelerate, and yet the Fed to ease aggressively. So if you just take a step back and think about these individually, then some of these might come true, but it's pretty certain that probably the market will not get everything it currently expects. Clearly, the end of 2023 was a very positive market backdrop. We had an everything rally, capturing most of the risk asset classes and really providing investors with a very positive year-end 2023. One key driver of that was the Fed pivot that did come surprisingly at the end of 2023, which really fueled this expectation for quite aggressive rate cuts, and hence financial conditions easing on the back of this. That has been a key driver, and we have to be very certain that the macro backdrop and the inflation data in particular are supportive of this to happen. Two, lower conviction in recession. That clearly already has been a surprise to some extent in 2023. You will know that we thought that the economic environment in the US would take a hit from the aggressive rate hikes. It did not materialize, and fiscal policy already in 2023 did play a big role in providing a necessary stimulus to the US economy. Now, we are entering election year in the US, and fiscal policy will play a big role. We have had, obviously, recent indication as well that the government in the US is willing to think about this more aggressively. The latest news is about potential tax cuts. And so this is an area we are looking very, very carefully to understand what the implications are for the growth outlook in 2024. And we still assume a slowdown, but it's very clear that the way the market is looking at it is a proper Goldilocks scenario. Now, the upside scenario, so even if we can avoid a recession, we have to be very mindful how much more we can expect in terms of momentum. There will be differences between the US, Europe and the UK, but needless to say that fiscal is an important ingredient in all three areas. But it's fair to say that the attention towards the US will only increase from here, simply because we know that the election outcome in the US will be an incredibly important event for global economies and global geopolitics. So our scenario is actually that the upside, even if we can avoid the worst of the downside, that the upside scenario is actually capped. And obviously a little bit of a wild card is what inflation will do in a better than expected growth environment. And let's not forget, we are still squarely in a geopolitical recession. If anything, 2023 has seen the backdrop worsening, and there's very little currently that we see that we will see an easing or an improvement in 2024. The political backdrop and the fact that we will see half of the world population pretty much going to the polls adds an additional layer of uncertainty. And again, I have to come back to the US election, because the potential for a further removal of the US from the world stage in the case of Trump coming in clearly would create a vacuum that others might be very happy to fill. These are the four areas we will watch very carefully, but now let's in turn look at some of the underlying detail. And let's start with the area that clearly has captured all our attention throughout 2023, the development of inflation and obviously the narrative of central banks coming with it. Very clearly, we've seen a massive drop from the double-digit levels of inflation that we have witnessed at the end of 22. And as widely accepted, the transitory impact of particularly energy prices and some of the goods prices that normalized with global supply chains normalizing have, of course, led to the expected reduction in inflation to what you see at the end of 2023, far more acceptable levels. But, and that is the important piece, clearly still way ahead of target inflation by central banks. The easy part has been done. The transitory implications and the year-on-year comparisons of the early inflationary shock drivers, that's all gone. Now it's the heavy lifting. It is the structural drivers of inflation. We will watch very carefully how labor market dynamics will unfold, particularly in the context of a better economic backdrop, because we should not underestimate the potential for structural inflation to be stickier in the context of a more buoyant economic backdrop. Currently, we're expecting everything happening at once. And we know that if the expectations are too positive and we've seen some adjustment in yields already, then volatility clearly will be with us throughout the year. If we could look a little bit more towards this idea of a soft landing. Clearly, that has been the key narrative towards the year end, that growth will not, as historically actually driven in the context of an aggressive rate hike cycle, towards a significant slowdown. There has been now this idea that Goldilocks clearly can continue and that growth will be stronger than expected. We've listed here a few of the areas that we will be watching very carefully for signs that the impact of the higher interest rates is less severe than originally anticipated. And not surprisingly, you will see right at the top the labor market and wage inflation in particular. And you will recall that the Fed themselves called out the need to create slack as a necessary outcome in order to see inflation moving back to target. But likewise, we're watching very carefully how interest rates will feed through the real economy in terms of delinquency, you know, the bank lending, housing liquidity. So all the kind of real-time indicators in the real economy that we would need to see softening or improving to further support our idea of a soft landing. Now, as I've said earlier, fiscal policy will play a key role, and it is a bit of a wild card because we are entering election year. You have seen in the Q2 numbers in 2023 how positive fiscal policy has driven US economic growth upwards. And if we will see the part that is overshadowing all of this is the idea of the geopolitical recession. And further fuel will be added with the elections happening this year. Some will be more controversial, some more impactful. Others will be positive. We should call out the election coming up in May in India, with the expectation that President Modi will not only be supported in his post, but that his party will come out stronger in parliament. And clearly, India, one of the bright spots in terms of its growth profile, in terms of its dynamism. And you will have seen that its inclusion in emerging market indices will further drive the attractiveness of its asset class. But other than that, it will be all eyes on the US election. We clearly will have an election here in the UK as well. And it is an interesting analysis to see what actually, in the context of a potential change in politics, you know, can be done to revitalize the economy. I know I've talked a lot about the US so far, and it's very clear that the economic backdrop is different in the UK and in Europe, because we know that the starting point is lower growth already. The expectation is that we are in a technical recession at the end of 2023. And as such, it is far more about how can we revitalize the European and the UK economy rather than judging by how far further it can reduce. So different starting points, but given that we know how important the US economy is for from a global context and its implication for European and UK politics, it is easier to frame the debate this year looking at the US market. As I said before, uncertainty is the only certain factor this year. This is why I've focused on the individual components. This is the way we will go about to prepare ourselves what might be in store in 2024. Valuations leave very little room for error, and even the overall economic and inflationary backdrop are dependent on some key ingredients that are yet to be determined. Now, that hopefully sets the scene. Clearly, it will not be boring. There's a lot going on this year that needs to be considered. And how we will take this into the actual investment context and the decisions we're taking, I'm now very pleased to hand over to Guy to focus on the implications for your portfolios. Thank you.
Thanks so much, Sonia, and good morning, everyone. So as we think about what lies ahead for pension schemes in 2024, I just wanted to first briefly reflect. 2023 was actually been a very good year from pension schemes for a couple of reasons. First, you know, if you look at both the equity markets and the rates market, we've actually hit historic highs in both those markets, and that's led to a surge in funding levels for many schemes. It's actually resulted in taking the aggregate pension scheme industry into surplus for the first time. That's something that seemed unthinkable just a few years ago. As, you know, Sonia just highlighted in her update just a few minutes ago, 2024 brings a great deal of global uncertainty, and that means there's a great deal of potential downside in the equity markets. And that's especially true considering the high current level of valuations. The other big driver of funding levels that we called out is interest rates. So we just wanted to talk about interest rates for the next few minutes. So as we all know, interest rates have risen a lot in the last 2 years. Yields have risen by about 5%, sort of trough to peak, taking sort of long-dated nominal rates in the UK from around zero to around 5%. And we've seen similar gains in long-dated real yields over that period. So the big question is, you know, have we seen the end of these big increases in interest rates? Now, to attempt to answer that question, actually, we held a webinar back at the start of November. And on that call, we said that we felt we were getting close to the peak in rates. And one of the main reasons for that is we pointed to the fact that the inflation data that had been so persistently surprising on the upside for the best part of the last 2 years had started to turn. And we were starting to see inflation, obviously not just falling, but falling at a greater rate than expected from pure base effects. And we've continued to see that happening over the last couple of months in most of the major markets. And in response, interest rates have started to come down. You know, long-dated interest rates have fallen by about 0.5% in the UK. We've also seen a change in narrative from central banks. Conversations have now turned to the timing of the first cut. And this is a significant change in sentiment. It wasn't so long ago that all the questions were about how many more rate hikes we were going to get. Now, if we think about rate cuts this year, I think we think rate cuts are more likely in the euro area and the US before the UK. But if you look at market pricing, currently the market's pricing in over 1% of cuts in all three of the main markets over 2024. If we do get these large cuts, if these do appear this year, what does that mean for pension schemes? Is this improvement in funding levels that we've seen over the last 2 years all about to be undone? I guess, in other words, coming back to the question I posed before, does a peak in rates have to mean a peak in interest, a peak in funding level for pension schemes? And I guess our answer to that is, well, yes, I guess, unless schemes take proactive risk management steps now to effectively bank these gains that they've experienced. And in particular, trying to take advantage of current high historic interest rates to increase their allocation to matching assets and thereby effectively increasing the level of hedging within their portfolios. But I guess one word of warning is schemes may well need to act quickly this year to avoid the potential for regret risk and missing out on locking into these high level of yields that are currently available. And then in summary, I guess 2024 is likely to need to be a year of action for pension schemes as they look to align their asset allocation with their long-term objectives, but also look to act quickly to kind of lock in these funding level gains that they've experienced over the last 2 years. I'm going to pause there now. I'm going to hand over to John Rowe, who's going to talk about asset allocation considerations for pension schemes in 2024.
Thanks, Guy. So I'm going to talk about more the growth part of the portfolio for those of you that still have a significant part there. And I guess feeding back to what Sonia talked about, really, we can't place very much reliance in any central outlook. Instead, we need to be much more focused on a wide range of potential outcomes and not putting too much weight in we think this or we think that. Instead, we need to think in a different way. And if we place less weight on a fundamental view, on an outlook of growth and inflation, then what do we do instead? Well, we can try to look for asset classes where there are some asymmetry, and we can also look at diversification. So let's start with diversification. And the classic example there is probably within equities. When people hold a market cap equity portfolio, there are actually 2/3 of those assets are all in one region, which is the US. Now, one of the reasons that this hasn't received more attention in recent years is because the US has been the best performing region, and US equities have broadly been the best performing asset class on a risk adjusted basis over the last 5 to 10 years. But as everybody always says, past performance is no guide to the future. And arguably, we should be more focused on that concentration risk now than we have been in the past, because when we look at equity valuations in the US, they look relatively expensive, both on an outright basis and also relative to other regions. One of the thought experiments I like to do is I like to think if we sat down with a client in 2010 and we said, well, about 50% or nearly 50% of global equities are US, does that worry you? I think a lot would have said, well, it's a very big economy. And if we'd said, well, what if it was nearly 70? I think in advance, a lot of people would have said, that does sound like a lot. I mean, that's a lot of risk in one place, isn't it? And so when you actually get there, of course, people feel differently and it can feel very normal. And there's actually behavioral biases for why it feels so normal for what's recently happened to assume it will continue. But actually, that concentration isn't just based on the region. It's also based on single stock concentration. 5 stocks in the S&P broadly represent a quarter of the index. So the value of Apple is higher than the entire value of the FTSE 100 or the entire global high yield universe. So that gives you some idea in a market cap weighted portfolio, the kinds of weights you had to just a few companies, and also in a global portfolio, the kind of weight that you have to the US in particular. And something else that can help here is if we're worried about US valuations, for example, or equity valuations generally, there's a lot of alternative assets like global property or global infrastructure, which had a very poor 2022 on the back of rising interest rates and therefore demonstrated in a way their diversification versus standard equities. And just diversifying between those different growth assets can make you less susceptible to any single path. Now, not only that, but as pension funds' likely investment time horizon shortens for all the good reasons that Guy outlined, continued de-risking, locking in funding levels, actually, the importance of diversification grows because you can't rely on a long investment time horizon to get a kind of average performance. If you happen to be in the worst performing asset class or the worst performing region, you can end up locking that in because you have a relatively short time horizon until buyout. Now, the second way that we can try to allow for this macro uncertainty is we can, as I mentioned before, we can look at assets where we feel the downside is pretty limited relative to the upside, or the other way around, the upside feels rather limited compared with the downside risk, and not base that on fundamentals, just base that more on valuations. Got a great example of this outside of equities. So outside of equities, US investment grade spreads, for example, look particularly tight versus history. We're down to kind of the bottom 10 to 15% of history. Whereas when we look at all the other regions, be that the UK, be that Europe, be that emerging markets, actually spreads look much more normal. So what we can do is reduce the amount of US that we own and simply diversify into the other regions where things don't look as stretched. Historically, US investments grade credit spreads have not actually produced positive excess returns, so returns higher than government bonds on average from these starting credit spreads. Whereas actually in those other regions, that's not true. You can still expect in your base case to earn a premium from investment over the next 1 to 3 years. So that's the kind of asymmetry that we can take into effect. And what does that mean in equities? Well, it means that we own less equities. And here the asymmetry comes from the fundamentals, which is what Sonia went through at the beginning. So we have a very low unemployment rate in the US, below 4%, or in the UK, where it's only just over 4%. And in both cases, we're broadly at the lowest level in 50 years. So that's a backdrop where, as Sonia outlined, there isn't a lot of spare space for an economic boom, because if you did, you'd run into the inflation problem and you'd start to get more reaction from government. Not only that, but in the US, which we've highlighted as being the biggest single driver of global markets, you've got a very high government deficit. So they're spending a lot more money than they bring in. That's exactly the wrong thing to be doing when you're at full employment. You're supposed to be storing your spare money when you've got lots of employment. So you've got it there to give to people when you go through a downturn. But that's not what the US is doing. We've seen this huge budget deficit of 7.5%. So again, we look at that and we go, well, in the long term, that's unsustainable. And it's also unlikely to get significantly bigger. So we see an asymmetry, and in aggregate, we bring that together and we say, well, don't look at any single scenario. In aggregate, we can see more limited upside for equities.
As a reminder, this podcast is intended for investment professionals only, and shouldn't be shared with a non-professional audience. This podcast should not be taken as an invitation to deal in legal and general investments. Any views expressed during this recording belong to the individuals and are based on market conditions at the time of the recording and do not reflect the views of legal and general investment management. Forward-looking statements are, by their nature, subject to significant risks and uncertainties and are based on internal forecasts and assumptions and should not be relied upon. Where individual stocks are mentioned, these do not constitute a recommendation to buy or sell any security and are for illustrative purposes only. Legal & General Investment Management Limited is authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. For full terms and conditions, please visit our website. To find more content, you can check us out on Twitter, LinkedIn, and our website. Copyright 2023. Legal & General Investment Management Limited. All rights reserved. No part of this publication may be reproduced or transmitted in any form or by any means, including photocopying and recording, without the written permission of the publishers. This material is issued by Legal & General Investment Management Asia Limited, the licensed corporation BBB 488, regulated by the Hong Kong Securities and Futures Commission, for professional investors only.